you know, about environment specifically. I sort of ask you how much responsibility Dow has to the environment. You sort of touched on that. Could you say, what specific steps has Dow taken to combat their pollution problem? And I'm sure you've been asked this thousands of times, but...
We've taken an enormous number of steps. I think the fundamental part of it, the environmental cleanup business is a little like safety. It almost has to start with the attitude and policy of top management. If you start with the board of directors and say you're going to have a good safety record and make it part of people's lives and they must do a good job in safety if they're going to get paid well and so forth, then gradually this spreads out and you develop a good safety program from top to bottom. The environment is the same thing. I think it was necessary to have the top of the company say we're going to do a good job in this area and to create an environment in which a guy thought he was going to succeed better if he did good jobs for the environment than the other way around. And we've tried to create that kind of an environment. Now, we've made specific organizational moves to cause this to all come about. And indeed, environment is a part of everybody's job in Dow now, and everybody knows it. And there's just a million things that are going on to control pollution or to improve the environment.
At the recent United Nations conference on the environment, which is going on right now, one of the countries called on governments to act immediately to reduce air pollution and water pollution. And I say this is to me. I'm really sort of an ecology nut, and I'd like to know. As a business leader, would you support anything like that to clean up pollution, even if it meant, say, a temporary sacrifice to the profits of a business? I mean, if say a business were polluting, I mean, it was in such bad shape, do you think that they should sacrifice profits to clean up the pollution
problem? Well, yeah, but that's a very complicated thing again. It's there's no question in my mind but what the environment can be cleaned up. This is a rather new subject for somebody like Dow. We have an advantage over everybody because we've been at it so long. We're in really good shape. We started working on this problem in the 20s. There are a lot of companies that haven't paid much attention to this and didn't even realize the problem existed. And when it hits them all at once, what do you do? I think it requires a little bit of patience. There's an enormous amount of technology has to be developed. It's really a question of whether you shut plants down and throw people out of work, or whether you take a little, have a little patience as well as persistence and push them and get them to clean it up, but don't try to do it all overnight.
Then you must think that we're not, you don't think that we're in too serious of a situation that such drastic steps have to be taken?
Oh, no, I don't think it's it is as serious as it's made, but it is serious and it's fundamental and it won't go away and we better do it. And I'm glad we're getting the laws passed that say we should do this. But it is terribly easy for people to get to be ecologically conscious these days and then to make all sorts of foolish laws and decisions, thinking they're doing a good thing. In fact, they can do a good deal of harm. The ecologist has to act in a responsible way, just like the industrial person has to act in a responsible way.
Yeah, yeah.
And another part of that is you can clean up 90% of the pollution. But Muskie passed a bill in the Senate that said by 1985, zero pollution. Well, zero pollution is a meaningless term. The reason it's meaningless is because Dow and others have developed analytical techniques to such a precise thing that now we can measure parts per billion of any chemical. And as the analytical techniques get better, it becomes apparent that there's no such thing as zero pollution. We can clean up 90% of the pollution. If we try to clean up the rest, the other 10%, or even if you get to 95%, try to get to 97%, you'll put everybody in the United States out of business. Now, how much can the planet stand? We really don't know the answer to that question, but we shouldn't buy every guy's statement that the world is going out of business when he has no idea that it's going out of business. Now, what I'm saying is risky, I'll admit. One could say, well, the world's going out of business, so why? What difference does it make? We've got to shut everybody down because otherwise the world will die. Well, it's risky, yes, but anything is risky. It's certainly risky to buy some statement, which is nothing but a statement, has nothing to back it up, that says 90% is not enough, we've got to go to 98%. Nobody knows the answer to these questions. Any course is risky. And the ecologist is going to lose his whole ball game if he pushes this to the point where he begins to throw lots of people out of work. We'll have a backlash that'll set the whole program back 10 years.
Couldn't more jobs be created though by manufacturing anti-pollution devices?
Oh, they are being, and they will be. It's a question of transition to a new need, and this takes time, and we've got the perfect society to make that transition. I'm in the business of working with entrepreneurs, and they're rushing into this area of environmental control in great numbers, and they're going to help solve the problem. But you don't do it in a switch. You do it by people getting interested and starting working on it. We haven't even started to see what technology can do in terms of pollution control. It's too new. We can see it in Dow because we've had the technology for a while, but the solutions will come along at an ever-increasing rate because there's money to be made in environmental control and jobs to be gained and so forth. You're right. It'll create a lot of jobs.
Okay. Can you refuse stock tips?
Yeah.
President Nixon just returned from China, and he just returned from the Soviet Union, and from what I've been able to gather, some sort of trade agreement has been worked out between the United States and China and between the United States and Soviet Union. I'd like to have your reaction on that, and will this have any effect on Dow at all?
Well, we've been doing business with the East for some time. We'd like to do more. It's very difficult to do business with Russia, and it isn't because there's any reason not to do it. It's simply because their system is so different that matching up the two systems and making a business agreement out of it turns out to be a very complicated thing. It's hard to do. It should develop. The trade with Russia will develop slowly because of these different systems, and the trade with China will take a very long time to develop. I think all of us feel these are moves in the right direction, that we in business happen to feel that we're as probably a very substantial part of the peace movement. We're like a industrial peace corps. We're a people-to-people program. If you do, people turn this around backwards and say you're exploiting other people, you know, when you go do business with them. Mm-hmm. But if you take the other side of the coin, commercial relations have a tendency to stabilize relations between countries. When you get tied together economically, it's a little hard to go to war with each other. One, because you know the people and you know they don't wear horns, and two, because the economies get a little enmeshed and it's a little hard to pull this apart. Mm-hmm. It's really isolated people who don't know each other who find it very easy to go to war. So contrary to all the theories that this third country exploitation and all this kind of stuff, some of which is true, has got to be truth in every kind of a statement, but the other side of this coin pertains as well.
Now I'd like to get something private. It's a little bit of a tender spot to you, and that is getting into Vietnam. Before we talked, and you mentioned about the fellow that wrote this book, I'd like to ask you, how do you justify Dow's continuing to manufacture napalm? I suppose the argument that I suppose, is used against you is, you know, something of a social conscience idea. You know, you obviously know the effects of the chemical, like, you know, on the North Vietnamese people. How can you justify this?
Well, in the first place, you know, we don't manufacture napalm anymore. We haven't for some 2 years now. But that, I don't intend by that to dodge the issue, because if the government came to us and said, nobody else will make this stuff, will you, we would. Our principle hasn't changed. The fundamentals of this, I guess, are roughly as follows, that we judge that for whether, oh, shut me for a minute. The fundamentals of this are roughly as follows. We think the United States government is trying to do a good job in the world. Since the war, given away $150 billion for purely altruistic purposes, trying to develop other nations, the Marshall Plan, all this kind of stuff. We are not an imperialistic nation. We're not after anybody's land. Now, people make all kinds of foreign policy and tactical errors, and our country makes errors as much as the next guy. And I'm not going to argue whether we should be in Vietnam or not. Let's just assume it's a horrible mistake right from the beginning. But we're there. We judge our government to be a moral government, trying to do the right thing. When they're in a position and have made a decision to do something in Vietnam, we will, as a matter of policy, back them up. That, I think, differentiates us from the Germans during the Second World War. We're said to be the same as the industrialists there that simply blindly followed their government. And I agree we're in that position, except that we've made a moral judgment on this, and we say our government isn't a Hitler-type government. And incidentally, if it turns out that it is, in fact, an immoral government trying to do bad things all over the world, we're willing to stand that responsibility. So if it comes to a Nuremberg trial and we're tried as industrialists, we will have to stand up and say, yes, we did this, and we did it after a responsible judgment of looking at our government. People have to judge us accordingly. Now, so much for that. Where do you stop and start in weaponry that the United States government wants to use? We would say that we're not competent to judge that. That if within the Geneva Conventions certain things are asked for and required, and our government makes the decision to use them, then it's not our place to go around and second guess them and say this is a weapon that shouldn't be used. Of course, this is an old product, was used in World War II, and we never would we would have lost many more men. I was in the Pacific during World War II. I know what flamethrowers and napalm can do in terms of jungle warfare, and I'll tell you, we would have lost a million men in the Pacific that we didn't lose because we had products like this. So I really think the issue comes down to people not liking Vietnam. And I'm not arguing that issue, but it isn't an issue of whether it's a nasty weapon or not. And if it gets to be that, then fine. We've got this international mechanism through Geneva where we can outlaw these kind of things. A great deal of propaganda comes into this, too. It's like the ecologist who says industrialists are maliciously fouling the environment. There isn't any maliciousness in this. There's a lot of things that come out of Vietnam that, as far as anything we've been able to find out, are just plain false. There's been a good deal of talk about napalming civilians, and I wouldn't stand here and say this has never happened, but I also know of numbers and numbers of incidences where our troops would have been plain wiped out if it hadn't been for napalm. They call in napalm, and these there may be a dozen guys on patrol, and they're about to be overrun by 1,000 North Vietnamese. And there's this is the only possible answer to save those guys. Whether we should be there is not the point I'm trying to make. It's what do you do when you are there fighting a guerrilla-type warfare. And we just don't feel we're in a position to tell the United States government, you will not use bullets, you will not use napalm, you will not use whatever it is. We have to depend on them as a moral nation trying to do the right job. We know this goes wrong every once in a while. And we also know that the propagandists make a great deal out of this that isn't true. There's been more propaganda perpetrated about napalm than it's going to be very difficult to sort out the truth. We went through the records of 100 volunteer doctors that went volunteered to go to Vietnam and work in the hospitals. And the records of the reports of those fellows that they spent their year in Vietnam are on file in Chicago. You get out there and read the reports, and you won't find out of 100 doctors, there were 2 doctors who had treated patients that they could identify as napalm burns. This idea that there's been any massive amount of civilian burning by napalm, as far as I know, is just inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
But Rampart started it with a great deal of propaganda to the contrary.
It's difficult to wade through the, you know, what is objectively truthful and what is a bit slanted. You said that that we've made a judgment that our government that is moral. Who decides what government is moral and what government isn't moral? I'm sure that possibly in Hitler Germany, people would say that, well, we're doing a moral thing.
Right. It's just a question of whether you're right enough in your judgment. Management.
Do we decide?
Yes. Then? Yes. We have to. Tao has to. The management of Tao has to. Now, there's no question in our mind, because you don't run a company as a democracy. Mm-hmm. You don't take a vote on everything.
Mm-hmm.
If we had taken a vote about our position in napalm, 90% of our employees would have wished that we continued the manufacture of napalm. So when it comes around to the question of whether, whether we should not make it on the basis of how people feel, actually, we'd have run a vote on this. We'd have surely stayed in the business. I'm not saying that says it's right. The decisions aren't made that way. The moral judgments are made at the top. You have to be responsible for them. The Germans, yeah, a lot of them thought they were making a moral judgment, but they were wrong. And they paid for it by standing up in the Nuremberg trials, and they should. Mm-hmm. We should, too, if we're wrong.
That's interesting. In 1960s, late 1967, the early part of 68, there was quite a bit of hassle about this napalm mm-hmm. business. And in a Business Week article of February 10th, 1968, there's a statement in there which says, according to some of your competitors, that they thought that Dow made a mistake when you continued to recruit on campus. I know that you got that there was quite a bit of turmoil on campus in your regards to being there. And what's your opinion on there? Do you feel that you made a correct judgment in continuing to go, or do you think maybe you should have stayed away for a while?
Oh, no. Gads, I think we were definitely right to keep going. We were operating on a matter of principle. It's pretty obvious that napalm cost us money, didn't do any good for us. It still hangs over our head. But the idea of being what we consider to be right in principle and then not doing such things as recruiting is highly repugnant to us. If we think we're right, then we think we should carry on our affairs in a normal manner, and we would see no reason to stop that. As a matter of fact, the placement directors in all these colleges were most anxious not to have us cave in to the critics, because it would have made an absolute shambles of university recruiting. If every time anybody complained about anything any company was doing in any field, it was prohibited from coming into those campuses, they would have been in awful trouble.
Well, I think the reaction was probably the fact that the Vietnam is such a sore spot on the history of America, and that the tensions, you know, really culminated to such a peak that the fact that napalm was linked with the burning of civilians, and I think probably that's why that there was such a reaction, at least.
Oh, sure, there was. Incidentally, our recruiters did an absolutely beautiful job. One of them ever lost his cool.
I read where one of them, they were caught in a, somebody was caught in a room and had to climb down a fire escape or something.
Yeah, that wasn't the only incidents of that type. There were several of them, and they handled themselves beautifully when they were really up against physical danger, you know. Incidentally, the number of people that came in interval in that period of time was higher than it was ever before or since. There was a great deal of interest in interviewing Dow.
I just have a couple things that I'd like to, sort of personal things that I'd like to ask you. Really, this is for my own benefit more than anything else. Throughout all of history, you know, from year one right on through now, is there anybody that you personally admire for any just any particular achievement at all?
Yeah, Leonardo da Vinci.
Why?
He's a universal man, a brilliant scientist, one of the world's greatest artists, a questioning mind, a guy who understood the human body. He probably would have been one of the leading medical people if he'd been in that field. He understood the anatomy better than anybody else.
Do you think if Leonardo da Vinci were living today, you could find a place for him in Dow?
Yeah, he'd be director of research at Dow, maybe. if you're asking, is there a place for the generalist, sort of?
Well, that could be, but
I don't. Talented people are the thing that makes a company go. And a man with Leonardo da Vinci's talent wouldn't have any trouble in any age. You'd never recognize him. Maybe he's the same kind of guy, but he's there, and I suppose we have him today.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. If you could meet anyone in the world today, if someone, you know, you can arrange an interview, like I did, to talk to someone for an hour or so. Do you have any who it might be?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I never thought of it. I guess you think of certain heads of state, but I...
That's not important. I just sort of wanted to...
No, I don't have any. There's a good many people with big names that I wouldn't care whether I talk to them or not, but I don't know of any of them that, I mean, there'd be anybody is interesting to talk to, and I don't know who this might be.
Nobody that just sparked your... well, what's the last book you read?
Aben Ibn's My People, The Story of the Jews.
Yeah.
Do
you like it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Excellent history of the Jewish race. Tends to be a little bit too defensive in some cases. I've read a few books on this subject. I think it's pretty good, yeah. It's obviously a man who's well qualified to write it.
Okay, and just one more. Are the Tigers going to win the pennant this year?
Yes.
Okay, you heard that. Well, I want to thank you very much. I really enjoyed this, and I hope you did. And I'm sure that this will prove very beneficial for for future reference for in years to come. Thank you.